very good year. Very good year.
Hello and welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
We love to read and talk about books so much, we decided to record this episode twice.
Yeah, we screwed up our previous file on purpose so we can do it again.
Woo!
By the way, our apologies for being late, a week late with this episode.
This time it wasn't just us being lazy. We had technical issues in that the podcast did not format and or record and or whatever.
Basically, the file's jacked up and here's a new one.
Yeah.
It'll probably be half the length and twice as phoned in.
Woo!
Bam! It's the quality they've come to know us
for. That's what the year review ads are supposed to be like anyway. Yeah,
that's right.
Reading from a list.
Didn't feel like doing anything for real this week.
Fuck you! yeah, so this week, instead of talking about a book, we are going to discuss the year in novel ideas.
Yeah, it's been about a year since we posted our first episode, and because we have research standards here, we didn't bother to check what the exact day was.
Yeah, even with the extra 4 days. We're like, eh.
So we're just going to review what we read over the last year, give you our top five and bottom five. Our personal top fives and bottom fives, not a collective one.
Yes.
And then just kind of discuss some things that come up along the way.
Yeah. So, to start with, we did 38 episodes on books in the past year. We did 40 episodes total, counting the Bill Paxton, Sean Bean podcast and the Hills Like White Elephants podcast.
Which I do.
But
especially the Bill Paxton, Sean Bean episode.
Well, of course. I mean,
it's the most representative episode of this vanity project.
But of those 38 episodes, I did a breakdown into our various categories of books. We read 11 classics, 11 YA fiction, 8 science fiction and fantasy, and 8 contemporary literature.
Yeah, so pretty well-balanced slate. Our goal going into this podcast was more or less to do those four things in equal measure.
Mm-hmm.
And did a pretty good job of it.
Yeah. A little skewed on... Actually, I was kind of surprised we were a little skewed on the classics. I felt like we've read the most YA, and then science fiction and fantasy after that, but I guess not.
I'm a little surprised that classics came out at 11. I would have thought maybe science fiction 11 and classics 8.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm not going to complain. Again, this is about the spread we're looking for. I'm actually trying extra hard not to railroad too many science fiction books into the rotation. Because although I do want to hear what you think about some of the ones you haven't read, I don't want to make you read one every other week.
Yeah.
Because you're
no
not...
No one wants to do that.
Because you're not me.
Yeah, we... Or I was talking to Jessica, who is our... one fan who asked us some questions for the podcast.
Yay, Jessica.
And, like, one of my best friends. But that's not important. She's a listener. And she said, yeah, I was just wondering if you guys could talk about your book selection process, because it seems like you read a ton of YA. And I was like, yeah, we do, but I guess not as much as it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, so, as I already mentioned, part of it is by design. We're trying to do roughly a quarter of our reading as YA. I think some of the YA we've read this year has been some of the more impactful literature.
Mm-hmm.
There have definitely been some strong, strong childhood favorites on there. You know, like Holes, we talked about being kind of a modern classic now.
Mm-hmm.
And Matilda is one of the books that every smart kid loves until they're old enough to read Ender's Game.
Yeah, everyone except for me had to read The Giver in elementary school.
Right, and it's a great, great book.
Uh-huh.
And The Fault in Our Stars was, like, our obsession of the year.
Yeah. And then books like The Hunger Games and The Golden Compass are both part of beloved trilogies.
Right, they've definitely, in The Hunger Games especially, has been a cultural phenomenon as of late. So I think that's a little bit of why it feels like there's so much of it, because they're very memorable books. Whereas some of our books, actually some of the stuff that went to our bottom books wasn't even stuff that we hated. It was just stuff that wasn't very memorable.
Yeah.
Because we have done a pretty good job of not picking books that we don't think we're going to like.
with one notable exception.
With one notable exception, which I'm sure you all remember.
But yeah, and I think the reason the classics maybe don't seem as prevalent is because it's all just the standards that you've heard about, but maybe don't get overly excited.
It fades into educational background noise.
Yeah, you see, like, Pride and Prejudice and The Scarlet Letter and Jane Eyre, and you just start going, well, you know.
Right, and then we do have some special events, like we did our Banned Book Month, which we're going to do again for sure,
because
that was fun. We try, not surprisingly, being us, if you've been listening to us, we try to make sure women authors and minority authors are being represented. We try to read some books that touch on an issue, so if we have 3 books in mind and one of them we know is, you know, like has a lot to do with feminism, Handmaid's Tale or something like that, then we'll probably move that higher up our list. We actually do pay attention to the recommendations. I don't think we've done a ton of recommended books this year, but we've done a handful.
Yeah, we did. Well, we did The Night Circus and Watership Down specifically on recommendations. And Game of Thrones we had already been planning on doing, but that was requested a couple of times. And I think those were our 3 requested books.
And that does bump it up our list a little bit, you know. I could think we've had... We're probably going to have to read this, even though I don't want to have it be the next Heinlein book we read, but Starship Troopers has been recommended by multiple people, so... That's next time we do a Heinlein book, that's probably the one we'll do. Even though I badly want Gabs to read Friday.
It popped into my head and then popped right out again. Another book we did, Ready Player One.
Ready Player One
was recommendation based.
Was very recommendation based. Maybe not to its benefit.
As everyone knows who listened to that podcast and got pissed at us. But, and then, yeah, other than that, we have a master list of suggested titles. When we were first planning this, Ben and I just kind of sat down, popped up 5 or 6 categories, and then just listed, like, everything we could think of under each one.
We basically listed everything we read in school, which for Gabs is a longer list. And then we basically pulled the title of every good book on my bookcase onto the list for the science fiction category.
And I did a little bit of internet research. I looked up banned books and popular YA books and classics and stuff and kind of been adding to it over time. But if we don't have something in mind right away for what's coming up, then we'll just kind of pop over to that list and scroll through it to see if anything jumps out at us.
Yeah, and the YA and the contemporary fiction lists have a lot of word-of-mouth recommendations on them, as opposed to stuff being on the website. But when someone says, hey, I've been reading this, Gabs tends to pop it into the list. Or if one of us hears a reference, I actually have my own version of the list, I think, that almost entirely overlaps. But we should actually put those back together at some point.
Recombine.
Because it's mine, I don't think I've added more than 6 titles. But every once in a while, if I hear about something that seems really interesting or kind of like a semi-phenomenon that lots of people are reading, then I do throw it onto my list, too. It's probably more on book selection than anyone wants to hear.
It's almost, we probably keep talking about it, but...
We probably could.
But it's not that interesting, so...
We keep talking about just about anything, if we put our minds to
it. But that's kind of the generalities behind it. If you are interested in hearing something in particular, and pop over to the suggestions page on the website, we will pay attention, and if someone if we get recommendations for one book from multiple people, then that also influences our choice.
Yep, it'll not necessarily make it the next thing we do unless our listenership dramatically increases and we get
1,000 people screaming for a certain book.
I would even say if we had 20 people ask for the same book and had 1,000 downloads a month, we would probably go ahead and do that.
Yeah.
But for now, it affects the priority list. Not necessarily, we'll definitely do this next week.
Yeah.
Okay, and then on a lighter note, she also asked if we would give a one-sentence description of ourselves, and we couldn't decide if that meant we describe ourselves or each other, so we did both.
Yeah. So we each came up with a sentence for ourselves and for the other person, separate of each other.
Yes.
And then wrote both of them down.
We'll start with the descriptions of Gabs because they came out hilariously similar.
Yeah.
And I said, my caustic sister who hates fun.
And I said, highly acidic and skeptical of fun. Which are really almost the same sentence. I was shocked when I said mine out loud and Ben just started laughing.
Yeah.
And you would think for Ben it would actually be a similar thing because Ben's description of himself are very common descriptors used.
Yes, if you
for summaries of Ben
know us or you've been listening to us, then fat loud guy who thinks he knows everything is probably just about what you think.
Yeah, but I decided more importantly, not funny.
Someone has to keep my ego from filling the entire room.
I'm the only one who can do it.
Gabs is the official pin holder of the Roman family.
I mean, your girlfriend really should do a better job of that, but I do what I can when I can.
No, Erica does not wrangle me.
At a gathering, Ben can be in the middle of a group making everyone in the circle laugh, and I'll just say...
She'll just be staring at me.
You're so stupid.
Angrily.
Can't believe you think you're funny. I've done that to Caleb, too, but he gets way more mad.
Caleb takes it very personally. Shall we get to the list?
Yeah, so we're going to go ahead and start with our bottom five books, because...
We want to save best for last, right?
Yeah, we don't want to like end with pure boiling hatred.
So apparently our pure boiling hatred episodes have been some of the favorites of our regular listeners.
Yeah.
So I had a couple of dishonorable mentions.
Oh yeah.
That didn't quite make the list for this part of for the bottom five on my list. Mostly are not books that I strongly disliked. There are a couple that I did. These are mostly just books that weren't memorable. Actually, on my initial pass through, I think I only had 3 or 4 titles and had to add to it.
I think I only actively disliked 2 of the books on my list.
Yeah, whereas the best list was a much harder choice for me. But my dishonorable mentions are The Chocolate War, because it's really depressing. I find the message in it to be a little confusing. I'm not sure if it's pro-authority or anti-authority, if it's pro, if it's pro-conformity.
Yeah.
Those seem like weird messages.
Yeah.
Like, pro-authority, pro-conformity seem like weird messages for a YA novel. And also, it was... one of the less socially aware books we read. I think having Charlie and Gabs to agree with that. And the other one was Divergent, which surprised me a little when that snuck on there, but it's not that I disliked it, it's that it had some promise in the first chapter, didn't live up to any of it, and in hindsight I think it's kind of formulaic, because there's definitely a YA formula that a lot of the good-selling YA books right now are using.
Definitely. It's like, you know, the young kid, because it's either a boy or a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, young girl struggling with who she is, and is an underdog. And actually, one thing I've noticed as a recent trend in YA, and I don't really know why, is a lot of female protagonists are unusually small.
Yeah.
And I guess it's just to put them at more of a physical disadvantage. But I remember when YA used to be, the girl was, like, really big, not
right.
like fat, but, like, tall, because that's weird. But now it's trended down to, like, you're too petite and tiny. And I'm like,
right.
Who makes fun of that?
Throw in a dystopian background and a couple of possibly desirable guys.
Yeah.
And you have
bam.
I mean, that's the Hunger Games formula, for that matter.
Yeah.
And some physical pain and suffering, usually.
Although the Hunger Games does it better.
Yes.
I think, I remember one of the problems I had with Divergent. I think Triss gets knocked in the head, like, 20 times.
Yeah, she does. That
and
girl
has no brain damage. I don't know how.
And so, anyway, my bottom five, my number five was The Night Circus, which, if you listened to our episode, I did not hate. I just found thoroughly uninteresting.
Yeah, and I actually didn't put The Night Circus on my bottom five, because I thought, even though, you know, there definitely were problems with characterization, for sure, but I thought that the setting was fun enough, and that the writing style was enjoyable enough that it's not.
Right, and this is kind of goes back to what I was talking about earlier, that I had a little bit of trouble with the bottom five, just because we haven't read lots of stuff that I did not like. I didn't hate The Night Circus. I think my final opinion on it was something along the lines of, it made my life neither richer nor poorer.
Yeah, it was a zero-sum
yes,
book.
Yes, it's just a thoroughly neutral read. And, you know, it's one of those books where 5 years from now, I might not even remember that I read it.
Well, it was better than Water for Elephants, I'll give it that. My number five... a book on the list is Watership Down, which, if you remember from the podcast, I was pretty lukewarm on. Like Ben, I didn't hate it or even really strongly dislike it. I just didn't care enough about the characters, and it was too long. So I was getting bored reading a long book about characters that weren't that interesting to me.
Yeah, and I'll second that. Actually, my number four was Watership Down. And I didn't hate it. I didn't really even dislike it. It was just way too long. And if we hadn't been traveling a bunch the week I was reading it, I don't know if I would have had it read in time.
Yeah. That definitely helped. So my number four is Childhood's End. And I kind of chose it because I was looking at the science fiction spread, and I kind of had my more favorite science fiction and my less favorite science fiction. And I was kind of debating between this and Foundation, because Foundation has no female characters. But ultimately, I thought Foundation was more interesting and a little peppier, I guess. And Childhood's End ended up being kind of like a huge downer, in addition to, like, not really having a plot, and I can't really remember the characters in it.
Yeah, and Foundation has some characters that are memorable, I think. And it has that, like, epic backdrop, even if it doesn't bother to have female characters. Whereas Childhood's End is more of a... it's more of a concept novel, I think. And in science fiction, especially the older stuff, because it used to be that literary quality mattered less in that genre. These days, there is a lot of really good stuff being written. But it's different enough from classic science fiction that I think there are probably... Well, actually, I know for a fact there are some people out there who don't like the latest generation of writers very much.
Mm.
And I think they're silly, because I think the latest generation of writers might be the best one yet, if anything, just in terms of actually having pathos in their novels.
I was going to say, I could see, like, I've preferred the more recent science fiction we've mm-hmm. read. I could see people really liking the new stuff, but not liking the old stuff, and mm-hmm. vice versa.
Yep. And even within some authors, like, there's, on the internet, if you want to see another hilarious internet shouting match over nothing, go find a science fiction, or specifically Robert Heinlein discussion, and find out who likes early and who likes late Heinlein. There are a lot of people who hate late-era Heinlein, but love the first half of his catalog. I don't think there are very many people who love the second half and hate the first half. That's pretty unusual, but, like, it's a dividing line that's out there. And while I still like Childhood's End, because I think conceptually it's very interesting, I don't think everybody is into reading a book for a concept.
Yeah, and the concept is, like, all the children become a weird hive mind.
Yeah.
The human race, burr, burr, and I was like, great. Thanks.
I think it's cooler when you call it Evangelion.
I'm cool with that.
And so, we want to go snake fashion here, or shall we go back and forth?
Oh, it doesn't matter, I guess, either way.
All right, well, what's your number three, then?
My number three was a split, and I don't really know why I kind of equate these novels with each other, but Brave New World and Ready Player One. And I would have to say, if I had to choose, I probably liked Ready Player One less than Brave New World. But the main problem I had with Brave New World is the beginning concept is super interesting and the society's, like, crazy, really interesting, and then the second half of the book just falls off a cliff for me.
Yeah, John Savage just comes across as a puritanical a-hole.
Yeah, and once it focused around him, I was like, I don't give a shit what's happening anymore, because I'm not learning anything else about the society except that this guy is annoying. And then as far as Ready Player One goes, again, it was a really interesting universe, but then the characters weren't interesting enough to make it go anywhere for me.
Yeah, I would have loved to explore the Oasis universe, which was really super cool, and not had 80s tie-ins and had a character I cared about more.
Yeah.
Because as it so happens, my number three was Ready Player One, and now we're getting into books that I actually did dislike reading a little bit. Now, I didn't despise Ready Player One, but I thought it was dramatically overhyped, and I was tired of it a pretty short way into it, because again, like, the Oasis setting is cool, and that did catch my imagination at points, but the book is a love letter to the 1980s.
Yeah.
And I am not even remotely into 1980s culture. I don't get it. I don't think it's good. I actually think it's arguably worse than some of the decades before it. And, like, there's just this really strong nostalgic value to that particular decade, because maybe the cheese level of the culture is just higher.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe in 10 years people are already becoming obsessed with the 90s, so maybe it's just because it's what you grew up with.
I mean, that could be, because I would definitely say the 90s are dramatically superior to the 80s, and I'm definitely a 90s kid, having been born in 1982 and not forming memories really until 87 or 88.
Well, I don't know. Do I even count as a 90s kid? Maybe barely.
I think you do.
Late 90s?
I think you do. Because the first 2 years of the 90s, if you go back and look at TV and stuff from the first couple of years of the 90s, it's totally what we think of as the 80s. Like, look at that hair and those shorts, that's so 80s. And you're like, 1992? What, really?
Oh,
It's like, yeah, the grunge movement kind of changed all the clothing.
Well, also Independence Day was made in 96, so woo!
Yeah, you see?
Best decade ever!
Unlike VH1, I do not love the 80s. My number two is Dracula, which, despite it being one of our better episodes, was horribly boring to read. I was force reading that book.
Dracula.
Oh my god. After the first 100 pages, I think every bit I read was forced. I was so bored reading Dracula.
I do remember coming over to the apartment, and I hadn't finished it yet, but I was pretty close. And I was like, I'm just going to go finish reading it. I don't know what Ben was doing. And I went into Scott's room and sat down on the bed and started reading it and just fell asleep and woke up like 45 minutes later and then sped read the last part of it in like 15 minutes and came out. Ben's like, what took you an hour? I took a nap. That's how boring the book was.
We will have more fun Dracula-related things to say later, I think, when we talk about some of our favorite episodes.
Yeah. I actually did not put Dracula on the list, mostly because it was kind of enjoyable in hindsight just because of what came of it, so I ended up being all right with it. But my number two is The Chocolate War, which, if you listened to that episode, I did actively dislike this book.
Oh, Gab's despised that book.
I did actually consider closing it at one point and not finishing it, even though I had to podcast it and just telling everyone, fuck this book. The lack of female characters, and the way they were viewed and treated just came across as stupid to me. And, you know, I'm not offended that boys like porn and blah blah. Like, right. Of course they do, they're teenagers. But, like, there are teenage boys in the world, probably most teenage boys in the world, who have at least one significant relationship with some woman, be it his mother or grandma or girlfriend or friend or whatever, like...
Or acerbic little sister.
Yeah. They don't all live in some weird bubble where, like, they're incapable of dealing with women.
They live, yeah. Where they live in, like, violence and spooge land or something.
Yeah, it's really strange.
This is what I was referring to by my vague comment on not very socially aware earlier.
Yeah, the phrase, if you'll remember, rape by eyeball, I actually just slammed the book shut.
Yeah, I think going back and listening to that episode and listening to our discussion on that would be a decent idea if you wonder what we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
Because it is one of those, one of our few even mild disagreements that we've had, which is kind of, I can't decide if that's a strength or a weakness of our podcast, but we do tend to see things the same way. And for the record, I actually agree with Gabs's criticisms of the book, because there is too much of it, and there is very little or maybe nothing in it to appeal to a young female reader as opposed to a young male reader. I think it shows its age a little too. And that phrase is pretty, I think in the context especially of 2013, that phrase is very inflammatory.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that would have made it through the editing process in a book that was published this year.
Yeah.
And I think I said that then, too. Mm-hmm. All right, well, do you have any other angry ranting to do about the chocolate war?
No, I'm good.
You're good?
I just never expected to dislike a book about chocolate so much.
Yeah, right?
Fucking love that shit. And my number one bottom five, interesting, book was 50 Shades of Grey.
Which will come as a surprise to no one. That is also my least favorite book of the year. It is flat out, back to back, wall to wall, shit covered awful.
Yes, and even though I greatly dislike 50 Shades of Grey, Ben hated it much more.
I despise 50 Shades of Grey. I was happy at the end when they broke up and were unhappy. I want them to go home and kill themselves. As far as I'm concerned, there are no sequels to this book.
They should be broken up, though. They're a horrible couple.
They are.
Christian is a fucking douchebag, controlling asshole, borderline abusive, possibly even just straight up abusive. And Anastasia,
an uninteresting little doll of a character who can't think for herself.
Yeah, and one of the things defenders say about this book is that she's, like, a great female character because she's feminist because she's exploring her sexual urges, but no. Sorry, guys.
I don't think
that's not really happening.
Is, and God, like, she has no spine. She has nothing to contribute to the conversation. Her friend, who's supposed to be, like, this awesome, powerful journalist, is a worthless piece of crap.
Yeah, just goes, oh, what? Oh, here's a weak lie. Yeah, sounds good.
There's a token Hispanic guy
who just says, Dios mio.
Offensively a caricature. The only character I liked was Charlie Tango, who is a helicopter.
Yeah. Helicopter balloon.
I would take a Charlie Tango balloon, I'm not
gonna lie. Yeah. I would just like to give anyone advice who reads 50 Shades of Grey. That is not BDSM. Like, if you're really interested in that, go talk to someone in the community or read about it on one of their websites.
Yeah.
Because most of the sex in that book is very vanilla.
It's not even written that well. I was taken, like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, oh man, I didn't think it was erotic at all. I'm not going to be that holier than thou guy. Like, the first sex scene is like, alright, you know, it's okay. There's better erotica out there. But then I'd run into a phrase, like, once a sex scene that just completely annihilated any sense of sexiness in it.
Ben's favorite was Christian Grey flavored popsicle.
You know, I'm almost glad I read that part. I wish I hadn't had... my other complaint is the book is too fucking long.
Yeah.
It's like 600 pages. Yeah.
And calling her butt her behind every single time really pissed me off. But, yeah, if you're entering a relationship with a guy and he tells you you're not allowed to touch him while you have sex, run away. That's not okay.
That's a sometimes activity, not an every time activity.
Like, if you ever touch my chest, we're breaking up. Like, okay, well, we're breaking up then.
Yeah, okay, see
you later. Obviously have horrible intimacy issues.
See ya, pally boy.
Yeah, that is nuts.
And so, let's get into our
favorite.
Yeah, our top five. Let's see, who started the bottom five?
I did, but did you want to bring up your honorable mention?
Oh, yeah, of course I do. How silly of me. So much as there were dishonorable mentions, there are also honorable mentions. And I want to get these in even more than I did the dishonorable ones, because I actually had a lot of trouble making my last couple of cuts. I had probably about a dozen books that I definitively thought were good and wanted to at least consider for my five. And I pared it down to 8 and had to start really thinking hard from there. And so my honorable mentions are The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, because it's hilarious. It sets the gold standard for absurdism in science fiction to a degree that some authors think that it actually hurts the ability to publish funny science fiction books now. It is possible. There are people who manage to do it still. And, you know, John Scalzi, who is a favorite of mine, as you should all know by now, actually put out a book called The Android's Dream, where its sole intent is to be funny. And it did well. And Red Shirts, the main body of the text, was clearly intended to be humor. And it sold pretty well. So, I mean, it is possible, but it is... Publishers, I guess, will get a little nervous if you bring something like that to them and you're not an established name.
And it's not the dry British humor.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And Android's Dream and Red Shirts are both not in the absurdist sort of vein. You know, the only person who's really I can think of that's comparable is Terry Pratchett and all of his fantasy spoof novels, which are fun, and we should definitely do one of these days. Anyway, my next honorable mention is The Giver. It was actually my final cut. It was very, very painful to not put that on my top five. And I was trying really hard not to cop out and do a slash or be like, oh, it's actually a 6. So if I had a 6, I guess this would be it. But it's just such a good book, and we'll talk more about it later. But my other honorable mention is The Hunger Games, which I actually cut just before The Giver, and I really love the book. I read it in one sitting the first time. I read the second one, or I read it rather the second time in a couple of sittings. There's a lot of things to like about it. It's really well executed.
Yeah,
it's pretty groovy. There's a little bit, in addition to being just a really excellently written adventure story, there's a little bit of element of societal criticism in there that you can choose to overlook if you just want the adventure story, but it's definitely present.
Well, you can in The Hunger Games, you can't really in the other ones.
No, that's true. Our movie audience completely missed the point when we saw the movie.
Yeah.
They were the capital.
Yeah, it was real bad.
Poor dumb fools. And it's, I mentioned earlier, it's a big cultural phenomenon right now, and I think it actually deserves to be, unlike, say, 50 Shades of Grey.
My two honorable mentions were Love in the Time of Cholera, which I really enjoyed, even though it was much different than a lot of the books that we read. I think the English translations of Gabriel Garcia Marquez's writing are so beautiful. I can only imagine how awesome his Spanish prose is. It makes me wish I could read Spanish.
Yeah, right. Like, take the 5 years of Spanish it would take to understand it.
Yeah. I mean, I just love the way those books are written, and I thought all the characters were super compelling, not necessarily realistic, but really compelling, right. interesting characters. And I was surprised by how quickly I read the book, even though there's very little dialogue and it's pretty long. And then my other honorable mention is Watchmen, which is really just, it's a good book. And I know I said this a lot in the Watchmen podcast, but even though it's a graphic novel, you know, you're doing it a disservice if you think of it as just a comic. It is a good book.
Yeah.
And the visual element is necessary, but, I mean, yeah.
And for the material it's covering, it makes perfect sense to put it in that medium as well.
Right.
We'll also talk about that one later.
Yeah. Okay. So moving on to our top five lists.
All right.
Go ahead and start.
Sure. My number five was Doomsday Book. I was really surprised at how much I wanted to keep it on my list. And I was trying to decide if maybe some sort of recency bias, because we just did it.
Yeah.
I
had the same thought.
I really, it was one of our least listened to episodes. It's a long book. It's science fiction. It's an author that most people who are not sci-fi nerds would not be familiar with. I wasn't even familiar with her until the last year or so.
Which is crazy because she's won so many awards.
She is the most awarded author in science fiction, I think, or at least as of when the edition of that book was printed. And it was really, really good. So even if it is recency bias, it deserves to be one of the best books we read this year.
I would really
strongly suggest you go out there and read it, even if you're not a traditional science fiction reader. Because
it's not traditional science fiction.
No, it's not. It actually, and so when I talked earlier about the latest generation of science fiction writers being really good, this book actually reads a lot like some of the better recent novels do, where you have characters that are really good, that you really care about, in interesting settings, and where the science fiction part of it is not as powerful an element. You know, like when we talked about Childhood's End earlier being more of a concept novel, those still exist, and some of them are still really interesting, but they're a lot more rare now. You have to have something in there that'll make it appeal to a broader audience, because that's part of how they sell books.
Mm-hmm. Doomsday Book is actually my number four. I just want to put that out there, even though I haven't said my number five yet. Yeah, and I had the same thought, maybe just because we just read it, but it was really compelling, so...
Yeah. We're both definitely planning to read more Connie Willis.
Yes, definitely. But my number five, top five was Doubt, another podcast that I don't think anybody listened to.
Which is even more of a travesty because it'll take you literally an hour to read it.
Yeah, it'll take you as long to read it as it will to listen to our podcast about it. Doubt is, well, I put it on there because it's one of the best executed plays I've ever read. There's not a single line that needs to be cut out of it. The characters are all fantastic, and all the issues are just boiled down to their bare bones. And I still find it amazing. It's a book about, you know, potential priest abuse in a Catholic school, and it doesn't come across as pretentious.
No,
that amazes me.
Yeah. It doesn't come across as this, we're going to study this issue and bring this to light and nail those bastards to the wall. There's actually none of that. It is, the title describes it perfectly.
Yeah.
I agree, it's really, really well written. And you read that in a playwriting class?
Yeah, it was the first time I read it in a playwriting class.
No wonder, like, anyone who writes plays should be familiar with this.
Yes.
Because it is really tight.
It is.
And it didn't make my honorable mentions, but it is definitely like, you know, we talk about this being a vanity project, and one of the reasons I'm glad we do this is because I get introduced to stuff I wouldn't have read otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, Doomsday Book, I think I probably would have gotten around to eventually, but Doubt, there's no way I would have read that without doing this podcast.
Yeah.
Like, it's worth it. There are a half dozen books I read this year I wouldn't read without doing this podcast, so...
I like it for the same reason, actually. And like I said, my number four is Doomsday Book, so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my number four is To Kill a Mockingbird. TKM.
Or as I recently re-listened to an older episode, and you were referring to it as Tequila.
No, that's right. Tequila Mockingbird.
And I was hating you.
I totally need to mix a drink called the Tequila Mockingbird. But, you know, coming-of-age tale, really well-written. There are various, like, there's kind of a standard YA plot for the first half about, oh, Boo Radley, let's see if we can figure out who he is. Mm-hmm. And then the second half is about this racial tension in a small town. Childhood, like the way children act. Scout's character is captured really well.
Yeah.
Atticus is one of the biggest badasses in all of literary history.
Fantastic dad.
Like, the small town feel of it is captured fantastically. Even some of the secondary characters are just, like, people you'd expect to meet in that kind of town.
Yeah, and the trials scene is famous.
It's famous for a reason. It's amazing. And there have been some folks who question the historical accuracy of the culture depicted recently, I suppose. But I think if you can set aside nitpicking and read it as a broader issued thing, then you're not going to have any problems with that. And then to the way it wraps up at the end, where Boo Radley pops out into the light for a few minutes, and the mockingbird symbolism, and
yeah, I always like how the trial plot thread and the Boo Radley plot thread merge at the end.
Yeah,
because I remember the first time I ever read the book, the trial scene ended, and I thought, why is this book still going? Like. Tom Robinson is going to jail, and there's nothing else to do, like, not even expecting the Boo Radley thing to come back.
Right, yeah. And it's one of the few assigned books that I managed to enjoy, despite school doing its best attempt to make me hate it.
Oh, school.
So, let's see. My number three is Watchmen. For reasons already mentioned, plus kind of genre bending a little bit, genre undermining, certainly, you know, the whole superhero thing.
I think it was probably the first book to start deconstructing the superhero thing.
Probably.
Or at least it's the most well-known.
Probably does it better.
Yeah, and everything that deconstructs superheroes now is unconsciously copying Watchmen. Unconsciously or consciously.
Or consciously. Consciously wouldn't be a bad idea. Well, yeah, what did I, I read, the first Kick-Ass release recently, and I went, oh, this is, like, Watchmen with 80% of the heavy stuff pulled out of it.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the same ideas. The moral ambiguity in it, because you don't know, like, the people who are the good guys, you're not even sure if they were fighting to do the best thing. The bad guys might not even be bad, and there are some bad people in it who may have been doing useful things even though they're clearly bad people.
Yep.
And kind of one of the things I mentioned in our episode about it is, like, the Doc Manhattan character and how they only have one superhero in there who actually has superpowers.
Yep.
And he's, like, they try to make you think about him in a way that makes him seem kind of disturbing, actually.
Yeah.
It's like, what if Superman or some godlike being actually existed? You'd be glad he was on your side, but he has no attachment to humanity. Isn't that, like, secretly terrifying?
Look what he could do to the world!
Just that, I feel like there's nothing in that book that is only one layer deep. Everything's been thought out past that.
Yep.
And, as Gabs says, it's the, if you want to know how good it is, the key element of plot at the end of the book involves a giant psychic alien squid, and it's not cheesy.
It's not stupid. You're totally like, yup, works.
You're actually shaken to the core.
Yeah, and I remember when I saw the Watchmen movie before I ever read the book, which, well, fuck that movie, but, I remember reading a review where they said, oh, you know, they smartly changed the end because in the movie, it's like he sets off a nuclear explosion instead of the psychic alien squid thing. Because they figured a movie audience would be like, huh, What a dumb ending. And I think for that movie it would have been dumb because the movie wasn't very well made.
Right.
So I actually already knew that the end game was giant psychic squid when I read the book. And I was, you know, thinking, like, that is kind of weird. And then I got there and I was like, awesome.
Yeah, because you're expecting, like, this B-movie, the heroes have to band together and fight it thing. And no.
Yeah.
Not to spoil it for you, but not even close.
Yeah.
If you want to know, go read it because it's fantastic.
Yep. My number three was The Golden Compass, and I wasn't really sure if this was on the list because I just love the Golden Compass trilogy, but one of my favorite action adventure novels, the world in it is fantastic, the conception of people having little demon companions, and just all the stuff that Lyra gets to do, running around Oxford, and then joining Egyptians, and then going to the North Pole, and then being with polar bears. Well, not polar bears, but essentially polar bears. And
another crazy ending. The multiple
universe theory, yeah. And, like, it's just an awesome book overall, and it's really well plotted.
You want to talk about universe building, this might be the richest universe in anything we read this year. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And Lyra is a really great character.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She comes across as a kid still, like she's not too capable, but she's really resourceful and she's really, like, she has some bad qualities too to go with her good ones.
She definitely is not a very awesome person, like goodness wise, but she's still really likable for that. And I like how some of her resourcefulness is coming up with things that a kid would think of.
Right, yeah.
So, like, during the fire drill, she notices, oh, like, the adults here don't keep the kids all in order like they would at, you know, a school or whatever. And she can take advantage of that.
Right.
Well, that's, like, something a kid could notice because, you know, they're used to being herded around by adults. And you can tell when the adults hurting you do not know what they're doing kind of thing.
The people hurting these kids clearly don't work with kids on it. As part of their training, like, coming up.
Right.
And so, let's see.
Do my number two?
Yeah.
So my number two is actually The Giver. So give Ben the stink eye for cutting that. No.
It was so hard to cut that. It was like, Giver Doomsday Book, The Giver Doomsday Book. Ah, madness!
I just put them both on my
list. Yeah, you found another way around.
No, The Giver is such a fantastic book. I mentioned that I didn't read it for the first time until I was, like, 23, which is really unusual for people our age. And I just remember the first time I read it, I sat down one afternoon, and I could not put that fucking book down. I read the entire thing, and it was, like, every chapter. I was like, mind blown, mind blown. Like, they have to take pills so they can't, like, have sexual urges? What the fuck is that?
Yeah.
Like, they can't see color? What the fuck is that? And, like, the more it was going, the more I was just like, this is awesome.
It's so interesting.
Yeah.
And I read it, I think, in high school for the first time. And I loved it, even though I was a high school kid. I wasn't as good at being cynical as some teenagers. But still, like, there are just so many interesting things in it. Our podcast, where we talked about it, we definitely wondered. We had a lot of questions about that universe. One of the things I like about it, and both maybe slightly frustrates me about it, is I think you could make it twice the length and really explore the culture a lot more.
Uh-huh.
There's just a lot of there are a lot of implied interesting things in there.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe I'll have to read the summaries of the sequels and see if one of them touches on any of those elements.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm skeptical of the sequels.
Yeah, I'm afraid to read them. I mean, Lois Lowry is an accomplished YA author, so I'm sure the sequels are good, but there are just some bars that are too high to clear.
Yeah.
Like, a book like The Giver, if I was an author, I'd be terrified to write a sequel until my publisher reminded me how many zeros were on the end of the advance I was getting for it.
Well, okay.
And they go, well, all right, here's another 60,000 words. And so my number two, if Golden Compass is maybe Gabs's nostalgic choice, my number two, Stranger in a Strange Land, is definitely my nostalgic choice. I love that book. I'm a big fan of late era Heinlein. I don't argue with people on the internet about him, but I really like this book. Jubal Harshaw is arguably my favorite literary character of all time. He's just a cranky old guy who is really good at getting his way and has a very entertaining way of phrasing his sentences.
And yeah, he's fun.
He is really fun. And, you know, just like Mike is so hilarious and adorable while he is figuring out how to be human, and then the whole Martian philosophy and how different it is. You know, it didn't, like in Star Trek, the aliens tend to be really one-dimensional, for example. It's like, oh, this is basically a person, except they're smarter. Or this is basically like a human, except their forehead is knobbly and they're aggressive. Or this one's like a human, except they're green and they like to have sex more. with Martians, it's like, okay, well, they're not anything like people and they are eternally patient.
Yeah.
If you had to give them one trait, but...
And they can die and not realize it and keep composing books.
that whole idea of just mind over matter and that kind of thing. Or that Martian artist who died in the middle of composing making his artwork. And and he didn't even realize it because he was so busy. And so now they're having this huge debate over whether to consider it as the work of a living Martian or a dead Martian.
Yeah.
And it's like been occupying them for millennia. Martians, the ultimate pendants.
Oh, Martians.
So much like our bottom five, we agree on number one for our top five.
We have the same top one.
Yeah. And that is The Fault in Our Stars by John Green.
Yeah, which, again, I don't know if it's super surprising to anyone because we both were just endlessly gushing over how much we loved it.
Yeah.
Fantastic book. Again, kind of like we were talking about with Watchmen, it takes a premise that I would normally see and go, oh, fuck, I'm going to hate that.
Yep.
Teenage cancer kids in love. Like, that was going to be horrible.
Yep, I feel a little vomitous already.
But it is somehow funny and touching and, like, incredibly emotional, and I don't know how he did it.
Yeah, and it really gets, it's one of those books that when you're reading it, you really feel emotional a lot.
Oh, man.
And for me, that almost never happens. And so, that was just, I was in love with the book by the middle of it. Pretty much no matter how it turned out, and just the, again, the blend of humor and tragedy, and...
It was actually painful not to read when I was not reading it. Mm-hmm. All I could think about was reading that damn book.
Oh, I agree. I just sawed through it.
And I definitely bawled at the end, which is pretty unusual for me when I'm reading a book.
And we were big Fault in Our Stars evangelists. We were pressing it into the hands of people we knew who were readers, and everyone I know who read it enjoyed it. And John Green is an author who deserves more consideration from us at some point.
Yeah.
I also read Looking for Alaska. It's really good. It's not as good in my mind. It would actually fit into, I don't know if it ever won a Newbery, but it definitely follows the formula of the Newbery Death Month we were talking about. Yeah. Where, oh, good friend dies, and now you have to be sad about it for most of the book.
And I kind of threw this away at the end of a podcast, but I read a book called Will Grayson, over winter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when I was in Cancun, and half of that book was written by John Green.
That's right.
But it wasn't as good as The Fault in Our
Stars. Well, still being good. Again, like, just a book with a really high bar to clear.
They're making a movie of it, and I don't think I'm going to go see it.
Unless it's just getting rave reviews, I will probably avoid that like the plague.
Yeah.
But it has great characters in it.
It does.
And, it's really hard to balance that subject matter and characters who are that entertaining. Like, I'm just afraid a movie version had come across too much as, look how snappy and charming we are! And then there'd be the death, and then, like, nothing but swelling strings and people looking sad for 20 minutes, and fuck that, I don't want to see that movie.
What a shit movie.
Sounds horrifically depressing.
Yeah, or it'll just turn into that, stereotypical, like,
yeah.
Wah, wah,
wah, wah,
answer.
High school Hollywood comedy with cancer.
Ugh.
Gross. All right, so now we have a series of awards to hand out to virtually everything else we read.
Yeah. Some of them are dubious awards, like I don't know if that book would want that award.
Well, but some of them are more serious, some of them are less serious, as we tend to do.
Yeah.
And so to start things off, the favorite classics. I had Pride and Prejudice and Jane Eyre listed. Both, they have some similarities. Both have a strong female protagonist, lots of good, witty dialogue.
Written by female authors.
Written by female authors. Pride and Prejudice, I actually enjoyed the very first time I read it, back when I was 17, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah, if I hadn't had thought about it too deeply, I might have thought Pride and Prejudice would jump to my top five, because I love Pride and Prejudice. I own the BBC version where Colin Firth plays Mr. Darcy, and I watch it at least once a year, but usually more, and it's like 6 hours long.
Yeah.
I fucking love Pride and Prejudice, but this last time around, I realized that by watching the movie too much, that when I read the book, it feels like I'm just reading the movie, and
right.
It wasn't unenjoyable, but it wasn't as fun.
Right. I'd like to see that BBC version someday, because I never have, but I understand that it's, unlike most movies of books, pretty much a direct transcription of a book.
It's awesome. I'll totally invite you over.
And then Jane Eyre, I just really enjoyed. I went into it with an open mind, but I was prepared to be kind of bored through it, and I actually really liked that book.
Yeah.
Surprised me a little
particularly bit. Particularly the Jane, Mr. Rochester scenes completely entertained me.
And so in the YA category, I had to make sure Matilda got a mention before we were done.
Rage Miracles.
Rage Miracles, because we loved that book as kids. Every kid in our family read that book probably like 50 times.
Yeah, I was obsessed with Matilda. I thought I could perform miracles with my eyeballs for a while.
And of course, Roald Dahl is one of those authors that you have to get to eventually.
Yeah, classic YA children, that is redundant. Classic children's author for a reason.
Yes. In the thought-provoking category, I listed The Handmaid's Tale. Because it's chilling, and it's thought-provoking, not so much in the sense of it brought up things that I never think about, but more in the sense of it just hit a little too close to home for me.
Yeah, like, here's the way society went in this book, and how close is our society to that, and how plausible is this, and
well, with
how are women being treated in today's society?
Well, and especially we read it back when the war on women was a headline almost every day.
Yeah.
And of course, today, North Dakota becomes the first state to pass a personhood law.
Yeah.
Speaking of the war on women.
So if your fetus is going to murder you, then too bad. You're dead, motherfucker.
Yep, that's right. Your right as a person doesn't supersede its right as a person in North Dakota, so I don't know what that means. Maybe it means no one will live there. Maybe the three people who live there will move out. Except that implies that two of them voted for that. on a lighter note, the longest book we read was The Stand. Oh my god!
Yeah, Doomsday Book's 600 pages. The Stand's like 1,200 pages.
The Stand is so long.
Tiny print.
So long.
Single space. So fucking huge.
And it's Stephen King, so reading it is not necessarily difficult. I mean, it takes a long time because it's huge, but he does. It is funny, like, one of the things he puts in some of his introductions and some of his thoughts on writing, and actually in the body of some of his novels, is that people criticize him as being readable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh yeah, I've read like 7 of his books. He's not that good. He's just very readable, and his impression on that is basically, lol, you bought 7 of my books.
Yeah, like, whatever. I do think The Stand is too long. Looking back at it, a lot of it, some of it was super scary, all the people dying and stuff, but some of it is really forgettable. It's not necessary.
Basically, everything that's happening through the epidemic is really interesting. Like, society just decaying and falling apart. And then the second half of the book, that's about the survivors piecing things together and their quest to defeat the Dark Man and all that, is too long.
Yep.
Yep. Let's see.
Weirdest connection.
Oh, yeah. The only joke I've come up with in the last year that Gabs thinks is funny is weirdest connection between Love in the Time of Cholera and Dracula due to characters eating things that they really shouldn't be eating.
Yeah. So Florentino eating the rose petals and drinking the cologne and whatever the fuck else he did.
Yeah, they're both whatever phagic.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the prisoner in Dracula eating, like... Yeah.
Renfield and Florentino could...
Renfield, yeah.
...form, like, a really bizarre fan club.
Florentino would be like, you're eating flies, that's gross. Renfield would be like, you're eating even, like, roses.
Rose petals and perfume, drinking perfume. And...
You're messed up, dude. So we have the worst at feminism, which we already mentioned these, but the chocolate war... Which we already discussed.
For not having a single female character.
Foundation.
For having a female character who's like a servant and gets, I think, one line of dialogue.
Gets to wear a dress.
Yeah.
It's her purpose. And Childhood's End, again, for... I think it has a couple female characters who do get to talk, but they're mostly worthless.
That's like kind of an airheaded girlfriend wife.
Yeah. And then that beautiful black woman.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Which was kind of intriguing, but then she never showed up again.
Yeah.
And then best at feminism, we have Handmaid's Tale.
Obviously.
Already. Jane Eyre, which we talked about as being proto-feminist when we did our podcast. Love in the Time of Cholera.
He has, you know, 500 odd mistresses or whatever, but you get to meet, like, a dozen of them, and they're fully drawn characters.
Yeah, they're not just, oh, here are his lovers, now we can get past it.
Yeah, it's not the point.
And then Fault in Our Stars for, well, essentially for Hazel Grace being such an interesting and deep character and being a believable teenage girl despite being written by an adult man.
Yeah, and something I actually thought about but I didn't mention is Lyra in Golden Compass is a believable 11-year-old girl written by an adult man.
Yep, there you go.
Go you guys.
That's right.
I also thought maybe Dracula deserved a Best at Feminism award.
That's right.
Because even though they were really sexist in the book, Mina Harker was the most competent character. So I thought maybe secretly was good at feminism because she was so much better than all the guys.
I still want to write, like, the 10-page short story version of Dracula where Mina Harker is allowed to be in charge and just like fixes it as soon as all the problems happen.
Kills Dracula, Lucy lives, and her and Lucy like run off together. Like, fuck you guys.
That's right. They run off together to go be good friends away from all the idiot guys. Yeah.
Maybe even make them lovers. It's a 21st century spin.
Yeah.
Haven't decided yet. Let's see.
Worst movie adaptations of books. Love in the Time of Cholera, which I just mentioned it's best at feminism because it has so many fantastic female characters. And then the movie said, wah, wah, and cut all of those women out.
Oh, thanks, Hollywood. Oh, Hollywood. You're so good at that.
Yeah, you got like 5-second clips of him randomly screwing women. And I was like, wow.
Yep.
Good.
Yep. Way to catch the essence of that, huh?
Yeah.
And then The Hunger Games, which we wrote kind of a lukewarm review of after we saw it.
Yeah, we liked it okay.
And have both kind of...
Soured on it.
Soured on it, yeah. It's less good as I think about it. It definitely... Yeah. The main thing for me is that I just have no desire to see it again.
I did see it again with Riff Tracks, and I realized, holy shit, this is not a good film.
I feel like...
It just...
The stuff with Rue was decent.
Eh.
Not as good on the rewatch.
No.
And that was the strongest part of the movie. And if that was eh on the rewatch, is probably a bad sign for it.
Yeah.
And like I said, I mean, I still think the worst part of it was the moron midnight premiere audience. who was the capital.
Yeah, who cheered when people died. Yep. Thanks for that.
Thanks. Best movie adaptations of books? Well, Jurassic Park.
Obviously.
Because, I mean...
It's Jurassic Park.
It's Jurassic Park. It's an iconic movie.
Also, you know, the book's good, but not great. And so the movie adaptation is a really solid action-adventure film.
It's one of those really quotable and rewatchable movies, yeah. Too. And then Fellowship of the Ring, which is becoming more and more as time passes an iconic movie as well, yeah. I think. And it's a really good adaptation, just even if it wasn't a billion-dollar franchise.
Yep.
It's it takes the important stuff from the book. It shows it really well. It sequences it in a logical order. It spices up the action just a little bit. It takes out all the singing and poetry. Takes out Tom Bombadil.
Which we're okay with.
And his colored boots and coat. And it's a really solid adaptation. And even though it takes the first chapter or two of Two Towers, those probably should have been part of the first book anyway.
Yeah.
The dramatic arc of those movies is done a little better than the books. Yeah.
Okay, our favorite podcast episodes. So Foundation, which we were loopy and giggling the entire time we recorded that.
And I was cracking up when I was editing it after the fact. So I feel like it's legitimately funny, and maybe not just to us, but we definitely had more fun doing that one. Yeah. Jurassic Park was a really strong one. We had four people on that episode, yep. Which was really fun. And again, we weren't as loopy, but we were having a really good time.
Yeah.
Especially for the first about 45 minutes of it or so. Really, really strong. And then we get just a little more serious in tone and a little more academic down the stretch. But those would be two of the first episodes I would suggest people listen to.
Yeah, and then along that vein, Merchant of Venice, which we also did with a guest.
Yes.
Dr. Anthony Funari, which I really enjoyed because, well, Shakespeare, which gets my nerd on. And it was really fun to talk to Tony about, like, all of the historical context that went along with the play.
Right.
And why, you know, it's interesting or important, aside from just a teacher going, Shakespeare's good, and all the kids being like, wah, wah.
I think that episode is actually pretty good format for us, too, where you and a knowledgeable guest nerd out, and I can just throw in a silly comment every once in a while.
Obnoxious.
But the thing is, my being obnoxious sparked him to talk about more interesting
That's
stuff.
That's very true. Because he's like, God dang!
Exactly. He'd be like, no, because these three things, you idiot. And that was great. Our Lord of the Flies podcast was another one where... That one was a good blend because we had a lot of... We enjoyed doing it a lot. We both cracked up over the idea of dozens of small children dying, which... May or may not tell you where we're coming from. But we also pulled a ton of symbols out of it.
Yeah, we talked about the symbols and themes in that book a lot.
And they were, like, legit symbols and themes.
Yeah.
We didn't have to hunt for them. It just seemed really obvious when we were reading it.
And on reflection, I think we had more symbols that we found in Lord of the Flies alone than any of the other books combined.
Yes. Which was upsetting to me at the time, if you listened to that episode. And then as our final entry here, Love in the Time of Cholera, which actually was not a very jokey episode at all, but when I was listening back to that one after the fact, I felt like the analysis in it was really solid. Like, we had a really good discussion about it and came across as sounding smarter than we usually do. it was really weird. Something about that book, like, it's... kind of almost demands that you take it semi-seriously, even though a lot of it is ridiculous and tongue-in-cheek. Yeah. And we did. And it's a good episode. If you want to listen to a good analysis episode, go check that one out if you haven't yet. All right, some of our favorite jokes.
Well, as previously mentioned, the death of the little ones in Lord of the Flies, which seriously just had us laughing.
Something about that just hit our funny bone dead center.
Is so wrong if you really think about it, but whatever.
The phrase "quite pneumatic" from Brave New World, which I have been known to use probably on a weekly basis ever since then.
Yeah, and I actually found out someone that Ron Johnson listened to the podcast. I don't know if he listens to it regularly, but he walked into a party and said I looked quite pneumatic. And I was like, I listened to your podcast. Awesome.
My favorite misspeak in the history of the podcast, the farts in our stalls, the gloriously juvenile joke that made it into the end of the Fault in Our Stars podcast.
The fart in our stalls, yeah, which is, like, so wrong for that book. Not okay. The man brain... ongoing man brain theme from the Dracula podcast.
Yeah, that was a really good discussion. This... Van Helsing goes on this page and a half long nonsensical rant about man brains and child brains and how Dracula has a child brain and how we're going to beat him because we have man brains. Even Mina, who's a woman and should have a child brain, has a man brain because she's awesome. Even though she's a weak woman, she has a man brain.
What?
Okay, Van Helsing, whatever you say, buddy. Rage Miracles from Matilda, which that phrase actually got used earlier in this episode.
Yeah. The Alligator Big Bang, which we came up with in A Wrinkle in Time, the A Wrinkle in Time episode. For some reason, we decided that an alligator exploded and created the universe, and it really amused us.
What was the... Was it Hitchhiker's... Guide, or it's a different book? The In the Beginning There Was Nothing. Oh, I think it was Terry Pratchett. In the Beginning There Was Nothing. Then It Exploded. One of my favorite Big Bang games.
Yeah, Douglas Adams was The Universe Was Created, which has generally been agreed to be a very bad idea. Okay, there we go. Like there.
Yeah, the other one I think was the opening of Terry Pratchett's first Dick World? Disc World.
Sausage Fest.
Sausage Fest. Oh, it's Foundation. The toad in Tuck Everlasting saying, Babbitt, Babbitt. Still cracks.
Ben's favorite joke.
Still cracks me up, mostly because of the angry stares I get from Gabrielle.
And then from the Foundation episode, we decided that we were going to create a podcast.
God, that was funny.
The fat guy watches movies and reacts boringly to them.
Just like me watching Easy A and being like, oh. Okay. Yeah, it's kind of funny.
And that's it. It's just Ben reacting to the movie.
Every couple minutes.
And we decided it would be our luck that that would become the internet sensation.
Yeah, right. The award for universe building. Handmaid's Tale. Again, chilling plausibility. The Golden Compass, which we talked about.
Yeah.
And Fellowship of the Ring, which talk about creating a universe in depth. Like, there's an entire encyclopedia that goes with Middle-earth.
It's ridiculous.
And he invented an entire freaking language for the elves.
A real fucking language with grammar and everything, guys.
And there are people who speak it.
You can speak and write Elvish. It's a real language.
It's kind of
funny. That's nuts.
It's pretty amazing.
Best couples for the shippers.
Yay! Which we are. Totally.
So, of course, Hazel Grace and Augustus from, The Fault in Our Stars.
Love them.
Yeah.
They're so cute.
They're awesome, even though they are cancer kids in love.
Elizabeth Bennet and Mr. Darcy for their acerbic English banter.
Yeah, how can you not love the two of them? And Sam and Frodo, lol.
They're totally gay. And the deeper and the deeper you get into the trilogy, the gayer they seem.
Read The Two Towers. Yeah, read The Two Towers and try to tell me that Sam and Frodo aren't gay. Sorry. I know Tolkien would be like, what are you talking about? It's manly friendship, but no.
I recognize manly friendship when I see it, and it doesn't involve men, like, holding hands and crying over each other.
I'm telling them that. Just saying.
For worst couples, we have the obvious leadoff of Christian Grey and Anastasia Steele.
Yeah, who are god-awful.
Two of the most annoying and terrible characters in the history of literature.
Marco and Celia from the Night Circus for the pure fact that we don't even know why they are in love.
I'm not even convinced that they are, other than that we're just told they are.
Yeah.
And Lucy and all of the guys from Dracula who were so deeply in love with her yet couldn't manage to successfully maintain a vigil outside her bedroom.
They're like, oh, my carriage broke down. Guess I can't go watch her for the night.
Why does she keep getting weaker?
It's not a matter of life or death or anything, whatever.
Why do these weird, like, bite-looking marks on her neck keep getting more ragged-looking?
I know Van Helsing told me I had to keep garlic in her room, but I threw it away instead. Hope that's cool.
Fuck you. So, in the category of best male characters, we have, because of course we had to divide them in half, Gabs rightly upbraided me for not having enough women on my list of good characters.
Ben only had one female on his list.
I was taking one character from books, and a lot of our best characters come from the same books, because, well, authors who are good at that are good at that. Yeah. So, best male characters, I had Tyrion Lannister, because who doesn't love that guy? Jubal Harshaw, who, as I already mentioned, one of my favorite literary characters. Salver Hardin from Foundation, who I just like that he's all calm and collected and thinks his way out of problems while his small planet is surrounded by powerful regional empires. Yeah. And Atticus Finch, who pwns all of the noobs.
Yeah, Atticus is amazing. For best female characters, Hazel Grace, again from Fault in Our Stars, because we're obsessed, as previously mentioned. Sister Aloysius from Doubt,
who I believe I referred to as one bad bitch.
She is fucking awesome. Seriously, go read Doubt.
She is an amazing hard ass.
Yeah, she's awesome. Scout from, oh my god, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Who, in my defense, was originally on my list, but I cut her for Atticus.
Yeah, well, Sister Aloysius wasn't, which is...
That was a big oversight.
A fault in your
stars. That was the fart in my stall.
Lyra from The Golden Compass. Again, awesome,
that was also
resourceful girl.
A big oversight.
Arya Stark from The Game of Thrones. Probably the favorite overall female character from those books. And arguably better than Tyrion.
Arguably. I wish there was more Queen of Thorns.
Yeah, she's awesome. But not until book 3.
I know.
And Galadriel from Fellowship of the Ring, who, despite being the only female character of substance in that book, might be the best character in that book.
And a both, like, awe-inspiring and terrifying character, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And full of magic, even though she doesn't consider it magic, because she's an elf and they're funny like that.
Oh, elves.
Worst characters... Anyone in 50 Shades, except for Charlie Tango.
Except for Charlie Tango the helicopter.
Who is adorable and awesome.
Tom Bombadil from Fellowship of the Ring.
Despite his multicolored clothing.
Because he's just an obnoxious jackass.
Just so obnoxious. And Graziano, the anti-Semitic hype man from The Merchant of Venice, who was honestly not that annoying. It's just that the only dialogue he ever had was, yeah, Jew!
Yeah, basically. It was like when you have the mean guys, the mean bullies in the movie, and then they have their little friend who only repeats their insults. That's exactly what Graziano
was. He was just a little toady during the trial scene.
Where's the second Daniel? And then he's like, a second Daniel, Jew! You're like, oh, God.
Like, shut up.
Least competent goes to all of the men in Dracula, as previously mentioned.
Good job for
failing
getting
at
Lucy
everything.
Killed, And then to cap things off, the most surprising, Red Shirts, for the really well-written and emotional codas.
Yeah, the three codas are my favorite part of that book, hands down.
It takes this really silly story that is basically an expanded joke on the idea of this meta concept for a science fiction show, and it then takes these three codas, which are retelling aspects of that story through some of the characters' eyes, and there's like no humor at all in that. It's just really,
it's well done.
It's really well written and it's really touching.
Yeah.
So I had a whole list of reactions to all the various books we've read, which we're not going to go over now, but I'm going to go ahead and attach them to the website. So if you don't usually listen to this through the website and you want to see those, then head on over there.
www.novelideaspodcast.com.
Yeah, take a look at that. Leave any comments that you have about what we've said. if you want to agree or disagree or leave new suggestions or do whatever.
So what's in the future for novel ideas?
Okay, well, we're definitely doing this for another year. We're not going anywhere.
Even though we don't have a vast internet following.
That's all right. I still like us.
I would like to give shout-outs, though, to Jessica and Kevin and Maria and David and Anthony and anyone who listens and comments and helps. And
yeah, we definitely appreciate that. And if we ever expand our listenership, you guys could definitely be the core of
super fans
of our listeners, which, you know, we want to have response from you guys for sure. So we're going to keep doing what we're doing. We have a couple of events planned. Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier, we're going to do the Banned Book Month again for sure. Uh-huh. We're going to do the Bestsellers Month again for sure. Is it April that's LGBT month?
Yeah, April is LGBT month. And so we're planning maybe not every book that month, but we do want to read LGBT-themed books and plays, either, you know, the main characters are, or written by authors who themselves fall into that category. Right. And not, like, the, like, stupid, I don't know, romance crap that people write. Like, actual...
Right.
Literature, because that is a subject both of us are interested in, but you kind of have to go out of your way to find it sometimes, and we haven't really done anything yet that's, has that as a central theme.
Right.
And so we're interested in bringing some of that to light, and if you have any good recommendations, please let us know.
Yeah, definitely.
We're in the market.
We're also going to try to have a little bit... a couple more guest episodes.
We have a couple of those already planned.
Yeah, we have a couple lined up already. If we can find, you know, and again, like some of our, not to suck up too hard to you, but some of our regular commenters and folks who listen more often, if you have a favorite book and you'd like to come talk about it with us, we're very open to that. Yeah. If you are an expert on something and you want to talk about something related to that, or if you know someone who's an expert and you can browbeat them into coming in, talking to a couple of goofy people with an unprofessional recording setup, we would love to talk to anyone who actually knows what they're talking about.
Yep.
About a book. We have one really big event planned for this summer that we're not going to reveal the details of yet.
But it's going
to
be crazy.
It's going to be several episodes airing in a 1 or 2 week span, probably.
And it could potentially make the podcast blow up a little bit.
Well, maybe.
We'll see.
We'll see. Let's see. We definitely want to respond a little bit more to recommendations this year. I don't know how frequent we'll make that, but since we only did 3 or 4 that were directly recommendation-influenced, I think if we did one, if we made sure we did one even, like, every 6 episodes or something, that would be an improvement.
Get it into the rotation.
Yeah, for sure. And let's see. And then, on a technical note, I am considering upgrading our equipment a little bit. I don't really need to tell you what our setup is right now, but...
it's not great.
I'd like to get some recording mics that are maybe a little more oriented towards recording voices in close proximity, and the equipment to record that directly onto a computer and be able to manipulate it as we go along. And actually engineer it like it's a...
real thing.
Professional podcast or radio broadcast, yeah. I'm not going to promise that's going to happen, but if it does, I'll... let you know. You should hear it immediately if it does happen anyway. So, also may go back in and clean up the audio on the first dozen episodes in the archives at some point, which I've been meaning to do but have been too lazy to do. But I do want, as much as we joke about it, I would like our audio quality to be at least a little bit professional. So, I think that's
About it. We went neither shorter nor phoned it in, because once we started talking about the books, we were like,
yeah, we just can't help ourselves. We fucking love books.
That was, I would say, a good reproduction of what you will never hear.
Yeah, it's actually, almost everything is in there still. Yeah. So anyway, if you, once again, have questions, comments, whatever.
Recommendations, whatever.
Yep. Love us, hate us. Then we already mentioned the website, www.novelideaspodcast.com.
You can email us at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
We are on Twitter at @novelideaspod.
And you can find us on iTunes.
So do that and leave ratings, reviews, and comments. And if you leave a rating, then please leave a review or a comment so we know what you like or what you don't like. Because we like that kind of feedback. That will definitely be taken into consideration with how we do things in the future. So I think that does it. Been a good year, been a good week, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.